This is Science Friday. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, host of WNYC's Note to Self podcast, sitting in for Ira Flatow. It was late October when residents of Porter Ranch, California, first noticed the smell of rotten eggs. It turned out natural gas fields in nearby Aliso Canyon had sprung a massive leak, spewing about 100,000 pounds of methane into the air each hour. California has declared a state of emergency, thousands of people have relocated, and some have called this the worst environmental disaster since the BP oil spill. But the Southern California Gas Company now says it will take until February, if not March, before the leak can be plugged. And so why is it taking so long? Rob Jackson is an environmental scientist at Stanford, and he's been monitoring the situation in Aliso. Are you in California, listener? How has the methane leak affected you? You can call us at 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK, or tweet us at SciFry. Rob, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Manoush.
So can you explain to us, what exactly is this natural gas storage field?
Well, the Aliso Canyon storage field is one of about 420 places around the country where companies pump natural gas underground to store it. It provides a stable supply, but they also do it to speculate on the price. They can pump gas underground in summer when natural gas prices are low, and then pump it back out in winter when people are using it to heat their homes and the price is higher.
So why how did they figure out that they could do this? How long have we been doing this for, and where does that space underground come from?
Oh, we've been doing this for 50 years or more than 50 years. Most of the gas storage fields are old oil and gas fields. Imagine pumping the oil and gas out over decades. You have lots of open pore space available underground. And because the field stored natural gas for millions of years, when you put it back underground, the chances are it will stay there unless you have an accident with the well itself, which is what's happened here.
Yeah, we'll get to that one, right? But so physically, I'm sort of imagining caves, but that can't be right.
No, it's not really like a cave, say, in Carlsbad Caverns that listeners might have walked through. It might be more like a honeycomb, as a better analogy. There are cracks and pore space. It's just not something you could walk through or swim through or anything. But there's just lots of open space available underground.
And how do we actually get the gas out then? How do we pump it?
Well, in these storage fields, the Aliso Canyon field was an oil field that has about 115 old wells on it that are used today for storage. So what used to be a well that was used to pump oil out of the ground is now a well that's used to pump natural gas back down into the ground and then back out of the ground when it's extracted.
And is that where the problem could be then, the pipes and cement that get the actual gas out?
That is where the problem is. There's a particular well at this location that began to have a problem at least as early as October. And the company made efforts to use mud and brines. And imagine pushing heavy fluids down that well to try and counterbalance the pressure of the gas that first started coming out. And they tried all of that, and it failed. And eventually the gas started bubbling down and out around the cement sheath and through the rocks up into the air. And at this point, it's an uncontrolled release of a natural gas that's just belching natural gas about 2.5 million pounds of methane every day.
And you've been driving around there, right? Tell me what you've seen and how you're going about monitoring these natural gas concentrations.
Well, we've been driving. There are lots of other folks that are taking measurements in the area because it's so important. So when we drive, what we see is, first of all, we're using a laser, a Picaro laser that gives you an instantaneous reading of the methane concentration. And imagine putting that laser in a car where you have a sampling port out front and you drive fairly slowly block by block and sense the concentration of methane in the air. So what we're finding is that in parts of Porter Ranch, we don't see any increase in natural gas concentrations at all. But when the wind is in the right direction, and that's key, and when you're in the upper part of Porter Ranch near the gas field, then we start to see really high concentrations of methane. Now, they're not so high that they're a health risk to people. The health concern really is what other trace gases might be in the air, such as benzene, which is a carcinogen, or hydrogen sulfide, which is poisonous.
And so the people who are complaining of dizziness or nosebleeds or headaches, what could be causing that?
That's probably being caused by the mercaptans. The mercaptans are sulfur compounds that companies put into natural gas to give it an odor, but methane doesn't have a smell. And we began doing this in the U.S. in the 1930s when a school in Texas blew up, killing several hundred people. And after that point in time, everybody started putting these odorants in the gas, and those odorants can be irritating. They can cause breathing issues, runny eyes, nosebleeds, and things like that. We're very, very sensitive to mercaptans. That's why they're used.
Okay, so let's take a call. I think we've got Ken from Mayville, Wisconsin on the line. Hi, Ken. It's Manoush here, Science Friday.
Hi. I actually grew up in Aliso Canyon right there. My parents still live in the house I grew up on. It's the last row of houses before you go up into that gas field. It's not the first time anything like this has happened. Back in the 70s when we first moved there, I believe it was like 73, 74, one of the wells actually blew up, and they had rented air came in. It burned for about a month or so. It blew out at one time from the Santa Ana winds, and they had to relight it because they were afraid the whole Santa Ana Valley would blow up from the sinking gas into the valley.
And so what would you do then? Would you sort of leave the area for a while?
Well, when that well blew up and it was burning, it was ignited gas, so it was burning off. But right now, from what I get from my parents, is most of the neighbors have moved out of the neighborhood, and they don't really smell it or have much effect from it. It is been a big concern with everybody in the neighborhood.
Well, thank you so much for calling. So, Rob, let's talk about what's been tried so far to plug the leak.
Well, first of all, the caller's right. We'll get to that, Manoush, really quickly. I mean, there were two oil well blowouts, one in 1968 and one in 1975. In terms of what's been done, as I mentioned, the first thing that a company might typically try and do is to provide back pressure. So when you have a blowout or the possibility of a blowout, you have pressure in the gas or the liquid that's percolating up to the surface. So one way you can counterbalance that is to push back down on it. Hmm. And the way companies push back down on it is to use things that are dense, such as clays, or you take water and put a lot of salts and turn it into a brine, like a very, very heavy seawater. So you push these back down. And this was tried multiple times at Aliso Canyon, and it just didn't work. And then they started having trouble with freezing underground and lots of interactions that began to force the gas out and then into the rock and up, and also began to destabilize the well itself. So the only way this could get worse would be for the well itself to just rupture at the surface and have the leak actually coming right up the steel tube into the atmosphere. And that's not happening right now.
So when the caller says that this has happened before, can you put it in context how this current situation compares in terms of how damaging it could possibly be to the environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite different. What happened before was a blowout in an individual oil well, much smaller scale. It doesn't mean that those individual blowouts can't be dangerous, and it doesn't mean that people can't be hurt from them. But on a scale of actual emissions, of the size of the leak, this is dwarfing anything that's happened like that before in this area, or really almost in any other area in this country. This is very unique and very unusual.
And just to put it into context, like how big is it, I guess, is the question.
Well, the leak, as I think I mentioned before, is about 2.5 million pounds of natural gas every day.
What can you compare that to? Like, for me, that, I gotta say, that doesn't mean much. Explain.
Yeah,
what...
here I am. Yeah, I know I'm a scientist. I'm sorry. I'm struggling. Hold that thought, and I'll see if I can come up
with a better
analogy. I mean, you can think of maybe just in terms of the leak itself. Sometimes I use the analogy of a balloon, and you can think of these underground storage fields as a balloon underground that's they just keep pumping gas into and gets very, very high pressure. And if the knot on that balloon comes untied, then the gas jets out, and it takes a long time for that air to finish. It just keeps jetting out, and that's what's happening at Aliso Canyon.
Let's take one more call. We've got a question from, I believe, Samuel in New York City. Hi, Samuel. You're on Science Friday.
Hi there. Well, one of the questions that I had was, what do you think would, how would it affect the water table? Because I know over here in New York and in upstate New York, they're really concerned about fracking and how that would affect the public water table. Mm. How do you think this natural gas bill in itself would affect it, and what are they doing to fix it?
I don't think it's likely that this leak will have a big effect on the water table. It is possible. The leak is about, or the breach appears to be about 500 feet underground, less than 1,000 feet. It's also up on a mountain or a couple, 1,000, 1,200 feet above the surface. So is it possible that there could be water interactions? I guess it is. It's not something that I think is likely, and it's not something, honestly, that I've looked at or know that much about.
Samuel, thanks so much for your call. In terms of the greenhouse gases, then, is that the real fear here in terms of the long-term effects, Rob?
I think there are three issues that people are concerned about. The greenhouse gas budget is one. And, you asked me for some context on what 2.5 million pounds a day is. Well, one way to place it in context is to look at California as a state. And this leak is bigger than the methane that's emitted by all industrial activities in California, including the entire oil and gas industry.
Well,
so
okay,
everything
that
else,
puts it in context.
Everything in the state that's going on, it's huge.
Yeah.
So that's one concern. In terms of the global methane budget, it's not huge. You're not going to see a massive spike in the atmosphere because of this leak. It's huge, but it's not that huge. The second issue that's probably also not a huge concern is the interaction with ozone. Los Angeles in its air has a problem with ozone. The ozone in Los Angeles is catalyzed by hydrocarbons rather than nitrogen oxides, but it's not typically catalyzed by light hydrocarbons such as methane and ethane, and it's also winter and it's rainy, so that would only likely be an issue if this went into the summer, and even then it might not be. But the biggest issue and the thing that people are most concerned about are the trace gases. What else is in that air at low concentrations that could cause health effects long term?
Rob,
we
have to leave it there. I can't thank you enough for explaining this to us. Rob Jackson is an environmental scientist at Stanford.